What I think Trump is trying to do is shift the burden off of American taxpayers onto foreign taxpayers, onto foreign countries, right? That's what I think the effort is. It's a big tariff number, and it will come down, and it will be something we can all sort of live with, and then the tax cuts will then be there to sort of offset that a little bit.
Welcome back to the Intelligent Investment Show live. If you are joining us on live stream on YouTube, great to have you. Matt, how's your day going, brother?
About as well as one might expect. Same, about the same as yesterday.
Yeah. So we've had, I mean, you know, there's not really, I don't know if there's a polite way of putting this. We're pretty much seem to be in a free fall right at the moment. If you look at the chart, it's pretty darn vertical for the last couple of days. What's going on?
Yeah, this appears to be a full on washout. It looks every indicator that I can see with where the VIX is, it looks to be a capitulatory day. Okay, it looks to be a capitulatory time, yesterday and today. After the last show, you know, yes, we were aggressively buying, thinking that most of the tariff risk was priced in to some extent, right? And we all thought that to be the case, okay? But the tariff announcement on Wednesday afternoon after market close was far more toothy than anyone thought, if that makes sense, okay? The 10% tariff across the board in addition to the reciprocal tariffs that are pretty onerous. And I think the specific component of the reciprocal tariffs that gave the market so much indigestion yesterday and today, well, today I think has a lot to do with the retaliatory tariffs from China, had to do with the calculation of the contra countries tariffs, right? Showing Japan at 67%, showing Eurozone basically 40%, and all down the line, right? Those numbers are, some would call dubious, okay? What those numbers actually are from everything we can gather, and again, I'm certainly not a budget person here, and I don't know what those actual trade numbers look like, but from what I was able to gather, is that's the trade, those are the trade deficit numbers, right? So China imports 67% more to the US than we import to them. And that's the number they use. Same thing with the Eurozone, all of those things, all of those countries all the way down the line. That's showing the trade deficit with each country. And so thus, and they took that number and they just cut it right in half and said, well, that's your new tariff. Okay. And that's how they're making it up. So I think the market took that in and just said, well, okay, this, you know, what do we do with this, right? What's the real, is this permanent? Is this not permanent? Because if it's permanent, you're looking at countries now like China with a, you know, they were at 20, now there's another 10, now there's another 34. You're looking at what, a 60-ish percent tariff rate at China, okay? And then they just, of course, responded this morning with a 34% tariff of their own on our products, right? And so we're just, this thing is starting to escalate, and that's what we're seeing today. And I think that, you know, although we haven't seen it yet, that's going to get, I think we're going to start to see reductions in EPS for S&P 500 and the NASDAQ and the Dow, you know, toward the end of this year. I checked this morning, and again, I like to use the end of January numbers as far as earnings per share for end of 2025. So if you look at the end of 2025 earnings per share on the S&P 500, the earning and that number that was produced on January 31st of this year was $270.14 a share. That number today is $268.18. So it's like 0.7% off, 0.8% lower. That's it. Okay. Now, do I think that number is going to hold? I do not. Okay. I think there's going to be a lot of adjustments made to that number based on earnings contractions, that because that money is now going to be going to tariffs. And there's going to be some serious consumer substitution behavior taking place. People buying, again, they're not going to be buying the Calvin Kleins, they're going to be buying the Levi's to save the money. And that's, so, however, this is one of those times when you really have to channel your inner Sir Baron Rothschild and say, you buy when blood is on the streets, even when it's yours. Okay. Okay. Because the economy is very strong. It's very robust. We have a 4.2% unemployment rate. We have inflation that's really in check. The other thing about, and we have a Federal Reserve who I have a tremendous amount of faith in. Okay, I really do. And there's this debate raging right now about the Fed is handcuffed. They don't know what to do because tariffs are going to cause inflation, but tariffs will also cause economic slowing. What do they do? They, if they cut rates, it's going to spike inflation. If they don't cut rates, it's going to cause the economy to go into recession. So here's where I disagree with, here's where I disagree with that whole take. And I am going to agree with Jay Powell, okay, because he actually articulated this several days ago, that the inflationary impacts of, and we talked about this a few shows ago, actually, the inflationary impacts of tariffs, I think will be manifested in CPI, not so much PCE, and they will be very temporary because, and it's not temporary because it's a transitory demand situation. It's temporary because inflation in and of itself at its core principle is nothing more than a rate of change calculation. It's a calculation of a rate of change. That's what it is, right? So if all of a sudden we're slammed with tariffs, okay, and prices pop, call it 1.25%, now all of a sudden, and that might show up dead in the CPI number of, we go from, call it, you know, 3.3 to 4.5 on CPI, maybe on PCE, that's where the consumer substitution behavior really starts to show, right? And it's not as bad. Maybe we go from 2.7 to 3.5 or 3.4 or 3.6, right? So it's not nearly as bad on that side of it, okay? The other thing that happens is although it might affect the year-over-year number a little bit, the month-over-month number, those, you, again, we might have like a bang April, May, June numbers as they start to come into effect, but then it flattens out, right? Because that rate of change is now there. The change has happened. There's no more tariffs coming in after that. In fact, due to sort of this, what would be a mechanical pullback in demand, that could cause prices to come down a little bit, not to fully offset the tariffs, right? But not, it wouldn't be so bad. So what the point I'm trying to make is that then, if you believe that narrative and that approach, which I do, that fully arms the Fed, right, to cut, to start to lower rates and say, okay, well, we have this fiscal policy over here that's causing this severe dislocation in prices and markets and everything like that. So what we can do over here is lower policy rates, lower quantitative tightening, to kind of ease, to throw some accommodation into the economy. And again, there's another fiscal side to this, and this is just a lot of uncertainty. I think a lot of this correction has been just the uncertainty of it. Is there's going to be tariffs, no matter what, whether not all of them are coming back, right? So whatever was put in, whatever gets put in here in the next week or two, right? Some of it will come away, but not all of it. Okay, so we have to be okay with it. So according to some of the discussions that I'm hearing is there's a fiscal accommodation coming with making some tax cuts deeper. So I think what I think Trump is trying to do is shift the burden off of American taxpayers onto foreign countries, right? That's what I think the effort is. It's a big tariff number and it will come down. And it will be something we can all sort of live with. And then the tax cuts will then be there to sort of offset that a little bit. Hopefully I'm right. We'll find out.
You mentioned the word capitulation a little bit at the very beginning of the show, that this seemed like a capitulation day. I want to talk a little bit about that concept, but I have sort of a follow-up question to it also, I guess. So let's start with that, though. When you say it appears to be a capitulation day, what indicators are you looking at? What gives you that feel? And I guess kind of somewhat tied to that is, what does a capitulation look like? Because I think a lot of times what investors don't realize is that capitulation by definition, by what it is, it's never comfortable. It never feels good. But in reality, capitulation is a great thing. It's the bottom of the market, right? But it never feels good.
So what we like to see is we like to see the market decline 90% to advances. So a 9-to-1 ratio of decline to advances. I don't know what that number is just yet today. I haven't looked at it yet. But what I'm looking at is the VIX. Usually when we see a VIX spike and it blows through 35, right? That 35 is a pretty hard number to go through. Okay. That's usually pretty capitulatory. The other side of it is we also have, you know, VIX inversion, right? So that the VIX was over 40 today. Okay. And it's at over 40 at the end of a long cycle, at the end of a long contraction cycle. We're not talking about the VIX spiked or the VIX spiked, you know, on February 22nd here. We're talking about the VIX spike, and here we are. We had a market top. The market started to roll over on February 19th. And here, you know, we're April 4th. So we've been in this now about 6 weeks, right? So, you know, to have a day like this flush out after an endogenous/exogenous event like this, okay, looks to be capitulatory, right? So, you know, I'm not seeing any sort of break, you know, on credit. And this is back to, again, you know, the two roommates, the two college roommates, right? The bond guy and the equity guy, right? And so the equity guy, I was looking today. So what I did is I went into the junkiest of the junk, right? The triple C's. That's one step above distressed debt. So you look at the triple C's, and so it's the credit spread of not just the junk bond spread, which is everything triple B and lower against treasuries. This is the worst of the worst against treasuries, against the same spot treasuries. So that is, I mean, that is two ends of the spectrum. So it's 10.17 is that spread today. Okay. So to put that into perspective, the COVID high, it was 18. August 5th, that Japan carry trade thing, it hit 10.6. It was quite a bit higher. Okay. So, and of course that came right back. COVID, it took a few weeks, but it started to come back. Right. So we're not seeing these massive, I'm not seeing the triple C's and treasuries blow out to 25 or 30, you know, like you would have seen the great financial crisis or a massive economic contraction. The other thing is I looked at, you know, your simple investment grade corporates against your non-investment grade corporates. Okay. And you just cut them right down the middle. So it's triple B plus and higher and triple B's and lower. And you just draw a line in the middle. And what's the average spread between the two, right? And if I look at the day after the election, 1.76%. On November 6th, that spread was 1.76%. Nothing burger. August 6th, the day after the Japan carry trade, 1.71%. Right after the Fed cut rates, that double cut on September 16th, right? Because they were worried about the economy slowing down too much, they wanted to really start to cut rates. It was 1.70. Today it's 1.63. So we're not even back to mid-September, early August, November numbers. So Jay Powell, he spoke this morning, and he said the economy is fine. The economy is doing really, really well. We have good employment numbers. We have good consumer spending. But we don't know how this is going to affect us in the long term, right? But he said they're fully armed with all of the options it takes to get us through this, and I believe
him. You know, one of the really interesting things, we did a show one time that was titled "The Math Matters," and I was just thinking when you were describing, I'm hearing what you're saying, right? About, and I'm hearing all the math and all of the indicators you look at and all the data and all of the evidence that you have to support the fact or the statement that the economy is good. And then I'm watching the stock market literally live on my other screen here in a total free fall. I think we're down like 1% since we started recording the show, right? And I'm just sitting here just kind of chuckling at the fact that the math still matters when everybody's scared. But they stop caring about the math. Who can think about math at a time like this? We have to sell. When the market's going up in an orderly fashion, people, it's moving up, you know, 0.25% a day, 0.5% a day, and people have the time to digest the math and to have a strategy and a sound investment thesis around what they're doing. But when things start going the other direction, fear kicks in, and people don't even, I think a lot of times, don't even take the time to do the math, right? They just sell, 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 sell. We don't have time for anything else. We have to sell, we have to sell, we have to sell. And the next thing you know, we're down 15% in a market that maybe only a 5% pullback was justified, right? But people, I don't know, it's human nature, I suppose, but when things get ugly, it becomes sell first, ask questions later. And that's where you see these become exaggerated, I think. And that is my very humble bystander opinion. So what says the expert on that? Would you agree with that that sentiment?
Well, we talked about, you know, animal spirits and emotions a few shows back, right? And animal spirits exist on the upside and on the downside. So the market always overshoots and the market always goes down way too far. Fear is an incredibly powerful emotion. It's designed to protect. It's the fight or flight in us. And it's very similar, like, I don't want to lose all my money. I'm going to lose all my money. I need my money. So I don't want to participate in this right now. Right. And then what happens is days like today, they sell and there's that they feel good. Like, okay, I'm out. I'm out. Good. I made it. I'm okay. But then that's what happens on days like this. Everyone just gives up the ghost. They sell it all and they walk away. And then when there's one more buyer than there is sellers, the following day, the market starts to go back up. The sellers have sold. They're exhausted. They're done. But the buyers are still there. And the buyers aren't, again, you know, aren't the kids with the Robinhood apps. The buyers are the institutions. You know, and they come in and they're seeing great deals. So we were at 22.6 times earnings on almost 23 times earnings on February 19th. Okay. We're at 19.4 today. We've had a more than 3 multiple contraction. Okay. So what we've seen, 1,000-point swing on the S&P in 32 days, 1,000-point swing on the S&P 500 in 32 days. Right. And we've not seen earnings contractions at all to speak of, like less than 1%. So that entire contraction has been the multiple contraction. Okay. And it's simply based off of emotion, because they're not sure what's going to happen with the tariffs and how that's going to affect earnings and how that's going to affect consumer spending and how that's going to affect labor and all these other things, right? So, you know, it's just there's a lot of uncertainty that's causing this reaction. And again, it's back to, if you're not sure what to do in a bad time, the action item is very simple. Sell. Sell, 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 sell. Just sell it all, sell most of it, sell some of it, but just sell it. Versus if the market's going, you know, if you think the market's going back up, what do you buy? I mean, if you're an index person, it's okay. You just take it back up. But, you know, it's not as clean. It's not as clear. It's not as defined, right? Like, do I buy, you know, tech? Do I buy consumer discretionary? Do I buy consumer staples? Do I buy utilities? Do I buy defensive positions? Or do I go back on offense, right? And that is the lack of clarity that a lot of emotional sellers have. Emotions get in the way of good decisions, right? So back to our discussion before about fundamentals. If you've done the fundamental work, these days don't really, I mean, they're not fun. They're not comfortable. No one likes to see red on the screen. No one likes to see balances contracting. But again, you look at NVIDIA with 42% long-term growth rate, which they're probably going to exceed that. The AI story is still fully intact, okay? Blackwell chip still has a 16-to-1 demand on it, right? And now you're buying it at 20 times earnings, okay? So you're buying it at half of the growth rate is double its multiple on a company that's worth $2 trillion, you know? In fact, our director of operations today, she's like, hey, I want to buy something. Everything's on sale. I said, good girl. Exactly. You should. And she just, We bought her some, you know, just buy NVIDIA. Buy NVIDIA, it's fine. You know, it's a great time to buy. I think we bought it at $93.89 a share. Will it go down to 85? I don't know, maybe. But will it go to 200? Probably. It's, you know, within a certain time frame, and that's what we look at. It's the long term look. And, to be fair, we get the luxury of taking that long view, right? Because we're not trying to make money in the next 3 days or 2 weeks or month, right? So if you have that prism, you have that time frame, you have that luxury. Use this opportunity. This is a hell of an opportunity.
Well, it's funny because I'm hearing you tell the NVIDIA story, and I'm thinking of, you know, NVIDIA has been, I mean, it's been so hot for so long that I imagine if you could take yourself back about a quarter or so and say, I'm going to give you the chance to buy NVIDIA at, and then recite all of the numbers that you just said at 20 times earnings at this growth rate and blah, blah, blah. And I'm going to give you an opportunity to buy it at that price. Man, there's a bunch of people that would be just tripping over themselves to go buy it, right? But now, right, when you're getting over a 35% discount on the same earnings and the same growth rate and the same whatever that you had years ago or that you had 3 months ago, where are the buyers? They're obviously not there, or it would be going up, right? So that's a great example of what I was talking about there. The math, people stop bothering to worry about the math when fear kicks in, because if I just said, here is the exact same NVIDIA story that you had 3 months ago, but for 35% cheaper, people couldn't buy it quick enough. But when the opportunity presents itself, we figure out ways or excuses not to act on it. And that's what lets the market keep falling.
Well, you know, I mean, we have a good economy with a bad market because of, I don't want to say bad policy, going to say a policy that has caused a great deal of uncertainty. It's not our job to comment on policy or not. They know more about that than we do, but it's caused a lot of uncertainty. But if you look back to your point, when those deals, if somebody said, hey, I'll sell you NVIDIA at $93 instead of $150, we take it every day. But when it shows up, people want to run for the hills. But we've had this is the worst 2-day decline since June of 2020, right? We haven't had inversions like this since like the COVID lows. Okay, Goldman Sachs just came out and it's at its highest level since 2022 of a recession, about 35% chances of a recession. It might be slightly higher now due to the China retaliation. Okay, but then you look at Vietnam. I know it's Vietnam, but they had the highest of all of the tariffs. It was something like over 90%, it might have been 100%. It was a huge tariff number, okay? According to the calculation that was made that they communicated everyone, right? So there was a meeting today, a phone call today with the leader of Vietnam and Trump. And he said, we're taking the American tariffs to zero. Please don't tariff us. Okay, you know? So that's Vietnam. I get it. They're not a massive trading partner like China or the Eurozone or Japan or Mexico. Or Canada, right? But there's people that understand that they need to, whatever they do export, we're their biggest customer. And here's the thing, and Scott Bessent said this really, really well. Scott Bessent is incredibly articulate in how he communicates, and I actually really enjoy listening to him speak. He talked about, because he's an economics guy, he's a professor of economics as well, and he talks about how, well, what a lot of people, I know there's a lot of consternation, but we are the deficit country. We are not the surplus country. Because we're the deficit country, we are at a massive advantage to the surplus country, charging them tariffs, right? Because in a trade war, again, the deficit country has far less to lose than the surplus country. And that in and of itself is the sauce. And if you look at the numbers of China, the 67%, whatever that number, the real number might be, I don't know what it is, right? There's still a massive surplus that they have on their imports versus our imports to China. So that puts us at an advantage. And it doesn't really matter which side of the fence you land on. The math is the math is the math. And it will hurt them more than it hurts us. Not that we want to have a trade war, not that we want to have any of those things take place, but it will affect them significantly. So let's just hope that cooler heads prevail and this thing gets itself worked out. Because what I have noticed is every time there's a a saber rattle, right? It's always, this is going to happen. I'm going to do this in a week, in a week. So China said, we're immediately implementing a 34% retaliatory tariff starting April 10th. Gives everyone time to, you know, let temperatures come down and discuss. And here's the thing is, sometimes when two friends or foes or whatever come to the table and they start to discuss things, other things can be discussed, right? Bigger issues can be worked out. And this could be one of those times.
Well, one of the things that we've talked about probably late last year, early this year, was the it was probably before the election that we talked about Trump probably being the risk and the return for the different candidates, and that basically with Harris you would see a little bit lower average projected return on the market, but a little bit less volatility, and with Trump you would have higher expected returns and higher volatility. And this is part of that coming to fruition, right? I mean, when you're calling you and expecting higher volatility with Trump, this is what volatility looks like, right? It feels so much better than when you're predicting it than when it comes true. But it's good to remember those things that, hey, this isn't unexpected, right? Or well, it's not unprecedented.
I will say today.
Yeah.
Today was unexpected.
Right.
Yesterday was somewhat unexpected, but, you know, and it's funny is I listened to our show a week or so ago where and I think it was the one in the middle of January, where I thought the market would pull back sometime, you know, in the late winter time, 5,400 on the low end.
Yeah.
And it was a very calm, it might pull back to 5,500, and that's okay. And yesterday it got to 5,396. The very lower end of that. And even though I said that in January, based on, you know, there will be an event, obviously this tariff is probably a good catalyst for that. And to some extent thinking this could happen, it feels terrible. It just does. I mean, even though the positions in the portfolio are strong and I'm not worried about any of them, and the worst thing you can do, the absolute worst thing you can do is sell. Because the only way to make sure you lose money is to sell when you're down. That's how you lose money, right? But knowing I said it, kind of think this could take place, it still is uncomfortable. It just is. Today was funny as I was in the futures this morning, early, and I was looking at futures last night. I'm like, God, geez, I'm not seeing a rebound in futures. I'm seeing just kind of flat. I think I saw the NASDAQ up maybe, I mean, nothing. Like it was flittering between green and red, but it wasn't bad. And then I, you know, went to bed and woke up this morning, and because I'm on the West Coast, and by the time I'm awake, the market is within an hour or so of opening. So the futures are pretty live, and they're, you know, those futures contracts are trading. So I looked at it and I saw the Dow and the S&P and the NASDAQ. And I was like, wait a minute. Am I looking at the indices closes from yesterday? And I literally thought I was looking at the indices closes from yesterday when I was looking at futures. I'm like, this can't be. And then I'm like, oh my God, what happened now? And then I went right over to the news side. And there it was, China's retaliating with 34% tariffs.
Yeah.
You know, and this is what happens when emotion takes over. Sorry about that.
The first ding was great. It was perfectly timed, right as you made a great point. So it sounded like a nice little sound effect. The last two, not so much. But the first time it dinged, it was great.
Right. The, you know, the problem, so when this emotion starts to take over, it can go anywhere.
Yeah.
So, sorry, totally lost my train of thought.
It happens. That's just a normal Friday for me. I lose my train of thought all the time. I think it's one of those things that the best investors are the ones who stay steady headed, I guess, is maybe the phrase I'm trying to think of there. It's that if you can stay sober minded, I guess.
No, it's funny. I took a few lines. So if the poem, If, from Rudyard Kipling, it's a Kipling, Rudyard Kipling is his name. Mm-hmm. Okay. Very famous poet from the 19th century. And I didn't use the whole poem, If, but I took a few lines out of this, and I'm actually stealing this from Warren Buffett. He actually posted this several days ago. But it's funny because that's one of my favorite poems. This poem, the entirety of the of Rudyard Kipling's poem, If, is in both of my son's bedrooms, right? It's a very, I find it poignant. I find it, honestly, probably one of the most genius writings ever created. It's that good. Okay, but the lines that I like to the lines that I like to use of it as it relates to the stock market is, if you can keep your head about you when, if you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, right? That's what we do. Okay. If you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for their doubting too. If you can think and not make thoughts your aim. If you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two imposters just the same. Okay. Yours is the earth and everything that's in it. So if you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs, and if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two imposters just the same, I think that's incredibly poignant, especially in a day like today and in the, like the last 6 weeks, is yes, we have markets go up and markets go down. There's triumph and there is sort of disaster. Are they imposters? To some extent, depending on the day, on the calendar, if you look at the calendar, yes, if you're here and then the market goes to here, that was an imposter. When you're here and the market goes back up, well, then that was the imposter.
Yeah.
So that's why it's so important to not make emotional decisions, not make rash decisions. Understand there's a lot of good, there's a lot of power in this economy, and there's a lot of smart people that are running the economy. You know, again, the Fed is armed, well armed with all the tools, all the arrows in the quiver to address this in any sort of an economic pullback, whether it stems from tariffs or just general malaise.
Yeah, that is that's a beautiful ending to the show there. I think that is a great poem, and I actually heard it from, I didn't know who wrote it, but it's in the Legend of Bagger Vance, the Bobby Jones Stroke of Genius. It's a golf movie about Bobby Jones, and they quote that, and I love that line, especially. That's the line that they quoted from that poem, and it's very, very true. If you can keep your head about you, if you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs, that is some of the best advice that you could probably ever remember. Well, yeah, as always, thank you.
It's hard to do, especially days like today, weeks like this week, months like March was. Here's the thing is, the one thing that will never change is that everything will always change, and we will always have the good times, but we will always have the tough times. And we can't have the good market times. We can't really enjoy those rallies. We can't really enjoy those wins without the balance of it, right? You can't enjoy the morning without the nighttime. You can't enjoy your vacation without going to work every day. Right. So this provides, if nothing else, it provides the context of when the market will recover. And here's the other thing, and I will make a little bit of a prediction here. This will turn around. And when the catalyst that turns this around shows its face, this is going to be a rip your face off rally. Okay. And I want you and me and every single one of my clients in there for that.
Awesome stuff. Well, hey, man, thank you for taking the time away. I know this is, you know, we do these shows every other week, and it's usually, you know, a little 30-minute break, but I know days like today, I know it's probably more taxing on your time. I know how busy you are on days like today, so I appreciate you taking the time to still do the show. I know it's important. This is the time people need to hear from you. So, as always, the Intelligent Investment Show is for entertainment and education purposes. We're not here to give you advice. Because we don't know your situation, but Matt and his team can be reached and would love to chat with you if you do have specific questions at 702-655-8300 or visit intelligentinvestment.com. And man, I appreciate your time. can't wait to see. You've been spot on with every other prediction you've made. So can't wait to see this one. hopefully plays.
Well, this one, you know, 5,400 was kind of my bottom end of this. And I mean, it touched 51,000. It might even got 50 something. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, but listen, that's what happens in a washout day. That's what happens in a capitulation day. Here's one small worthless prediction I'll make next week. And you can throw arrows at me on our next show, see if I got it right. I think next week is going to be one heck of a good week. Okay. I would say we'll probably regain 5,500 next week on the S&P.
Bold call. Can't wait to see that play out. Well, Matt, thank you, man. Appreciate it. We'll see you in a couple of weeks, and we'll see if you're right.
Talk soon.
Later, man.
As always, the Intelligent Investment Show is for your entertainment, education, and general amusement purposes only. It is not intended to be financial advice or investment advice of any kind. Neither Matt nor I or any of our companies or associated entities know anything about your financial circumstances, so it would be unwise for us to tell you what to do with your money. We encourage you to seek a professional if you do have questions about your portfolio or your financial plans. If you would like to reach Matt and his team, you may do so by giving him a call at 702-655-8300 or visiting intelligentinvestment.com. We thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time. Discussions in the Intelligent Investment Show are for educational purposes only. The information presented should not be considered specific investment advice or a recommendation to take any particular course of action. Always consult with a financial professional regarding your personal situation before making investment or financial decisions. The views and opinions expressed are based on current economic and market conditions and are subject to change. There is no guarantee that any statements of future expectations will come to fruition. All investing involves risk, including the potential for loss of principal. Securities offered through United Planners Financial Services, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through American Retirement Planning Group, ARPG, and United Planners are independent companies. Garrett Lill and Wealth Partners are not affiliated with ARPG or United Planners. Any endorsement that I may have given during this recording, it is important to note that I am not a client of ARPG. The views expressed should not be considered representative in any way of my past, present, or future experience with Matt or ARPG. No incentives have been provided to me in connection with any endorsements I may have given on the Intelligent Investment Show. Investing involves risk, and there is no guarantee of any future results, performance, or success.